if you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a teacher, you have to follow the rules and get the certifications. If you want to own a business, you want to build a product, you want to build this, you don't.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to Going Deep with Aaron Watson. I have got an interview today that I am so fired up to be sharing with you. Anthony Venieri is the co-founder and CEO of Fit, a content platform based out of Pittsburgh, but is actively setting up sites focused on major US metropolises and soon cities around the world, helping people find experiences and events that serve their fitness goals. I have been circling this interview to learn more about Fit and Anthony for a while, so I was so happy to get 40 minutes with him in his office in Lawrenceville. The company is growing, recently announced a $1 million seed round with some really impressive growth plans in the future. We talk about his evolution as an entrepreneur and his unique stair-step approach to reaching the point that he is now. There's a lot for you to learn and a lot of insight. If you are hungry for more insights, make sure that you check out the Going Deep Summit January 27th at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater. It is going to be one full day. It's a Saturday in January. That is an event that I am hosting with some previous guests of the show speaking, and all of the fantastic listeners of this show and other folks from the entrepreneurial community around Pittsburgh and beyond, congregating for one full day to talk, to connect, and to learn, to up their game. We are selling these tickets for $50 through December 4th, and then they go up. So you want to get them as soon as possible and really just buy into the notion that part of the magic happens when you get in the room with like-minded people. This past weekend, in my Facebook group for the Connection University, we had over 30 people come to the shop in Homewood, and it was just a fantastic three-hour meetup. So many new friends, new faces, or connecting people in the real world that you might only know as a profile picture and some funny posts. We're going to be doing more of that, and this summit is kind of a greater manifestation of that hope to bring our digital experiences into the real world. I hope that you feel like a fly on the wall for this interview with Anthony Venieri.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
So Anthony, thank you so much for coming to my podcast. I really appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, happy to have you here.
We're in the offices of Fit. We're going to talk both about the evolution of this company, but also kind of your evolution, starting multiple companies and as an entrepreneur and the lessons you've learned. But my first question is actually, your main sport was football. You were a defensive end in high school. Was that the only sport, or what other sports did you play growing up?
I mean, I played soccer and all kinds of other sports growing up, but all the attention went to football in high school. You live in southwestern Pennsylvania. Football is kind of the thing.
Yeah.
So it's funny. I always joke around. If I knew that being an entrepreneur was a thing in high school, I would have dropped football in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And I would have done that. But yeah, we played. My brother and I both played football. And we both played the same position.
What are some of the lessons that you think people who played a lot of sports growing up can apply to the world of business or of entrepreneurship?
It's funny. I think you know John Malecki.
Yeah.
Him and I always joked about the team sports thing. Like football, you know how to be on a team, get along, get work done, kind of motivate. You're out there doing it. You don't need it. It's something that is just different. You learn how to kind of get after stuff. And also you learn how to move things along for the good of the business. And him and I always joke around like we're different just because we play team sports.
Yeah. I also say that, you know, pitches or these kind of higher stress meetings that you may have are, in my opinion, nothing compared to like giving the talk in the middle of a huddle or trying to inspire some teammates and find the words that'll be rousing and moving them to action and pull more out of themselves. After you graduated, you served in the Marines, came back, and you've since then launched a succession of fitness related businesses. And I think that we can really paint a picture for people of a different type of ladder that you could climb, so to speak. You've started in not necessarily retail, but in a physical gym, mm-hmm. moved up into a content play, a community play, and continue to rise until now you just raised over $1 million for Fit and are continuing to scale that in a way that hasn't necessarily been possible with other businesses. So maybe we can start back at the beginning of launching the gym with your brother and how that came to be, why you thought that that was an option when not everyone starts a gym for themselves and finds profitability in 2 months.
Yeah, I enlisted in the Marines out of high school. My goal was to go to the Marines as an enlisted, go through officer training school, and then become an officer, which is rare to do both. And I enlisted in the Marines. It was actually in the reserves at first, but I got to go through all kinds of training. And in doing that, while I was away, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. It was terminal brain cancer, so there was nothing they could do eventually. So after being away and going through trainings and then coming back, I got hurt at the same time that he got really bad, really sick. So I got to come home and spend time with him. And Joe was a history teacher, a high school history teacher. Joe came home as well. And we didn't know, much outside of Joe could be a teacher. I knew fitness from Marines, but I wasn't a trainer or anything. I just had a lot of experiences training people in the Marines and just in high school and football, just being fit. So it was like, support the family. We needed to money financially. I was actually, the first thing I actually did was I worked a night turn security somewhere. And then from there, we had this idea of like, let's train people. So it was started in parks and started anywhere I could get somebody. I went door to door with the worst design pamphlets you've ever seen in your life, offering like kettlebell military. It was right around when CrossFit was getting big and that mentality. So I had that experience and I was like, I'm going to train people. And it was public parks and schools and everywhere. And then eventually we walked by a space that was 12,000 square feet. It was an indoor skate park that was abandoned for 4 or 5 years. I went to the landlord and I was like, I'm going to turn this into a gym. And he's like, this child is an idiot. I said, listen, make a bet. If I open a gym, it was a Thursday. I was like, if I open a gym on a Monday, I get to have, this much rent and I get to have this. He's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Me, my buddies, my family, we went, tore down a skate park in 4 days, opened a 12,000 square foot gym. And I had such a community of people around different gyms in different areas training that the day we opened, we had, 100 people there. And it was all about like community and just doing it right. It wasn't about typical fitness. And from that point, Joe and I had the gym. He was still teaching. So he left his job to be full-time at the gym. And that was it. From there, we won awards. He was nominated Trainer of the Year. We had a huge community and we just were going after it. And then we went from that to having kettlebells and equipment manufactured overseas for us and our brand. We had our own certification. We really had this mentality of like kettlebells and body weight was the way to go. So we pushed it and got like accredited certifications and we're training people at conferences and started licensing our name. It was actually Hybrid Athlete and Kettlebell Cardio were the names. We had over 40 locations under Kettlebell Cardio by the end of it. But we got to this point where it just didn't feel right. We didn't like that. One, it cost so much to scale and open up new locations or have the equipment, as well as it just didn't seem right to charge as much as we were. Like CrossFit's expensive and we didn't like charging as much as we were to help to get people healthy, because we thought like we want people to be healthy. It was a different mentality. So we got rid of all the assets of the business, tried to sell what we could, and everything else we kind of just let, I guess, expire, however you would say. And
can we break that down a little bit though? Yeah. So that's kind of this life cycle, and two of the things you said that were really interesting in there were how quickly it was successful, partially because of the CrossFit trend and the kettlebell trend being on the upswing, but also this community that you had already garnered through. I'm just kind of curious to unpack that a little bit, because some people really struggle with that. Like, how do I build a tribe? How do I not maybe build one, but attach myself to one or be a part of something in an authentic way?
So I think the reason that, it's taken Joe and I a little bit longer to find the one thing we want to do, versus like any one of our businesses have made, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more. The gyms were making, $40,000-$50,000 a month. And I was 21, 22. So we were making money, but money wasn't our passion. And what we were doing was I've had the cops call on me a number of times for going door to door, ask people to come to our gym, going to communities, trying to get sports teams. And it was building the tribe was just like, listen, I think I could help you out. I think what we're doing works. I think our training works. And I didn't even invent it. It was something that I learned across the Marines and different instructors. And there's a guy, he owns something called Mountain Athlete. His name's Rob Shaw. I followed him growing up in the Marines like so much. And everyone that we followed, I wasn't saying, hey, I invented this. It was, no, I got it from this guy and this guy. And we just found a way to put it together, do it in an area that needed it. And we just told everybody, like, come if you don't like it. Like, first class was free. Come spend time. We would have free community workouts on Saturdays, like big holiday events. It's just we had a good time, and people wanted to be around us because we thought we did it the right way. The way the billing was set up, the way that there was no commitment. There was no, like, it was completely separate of how you would think of a gym. And that's how we built it. And the hardest part was shutting down because we had such a group of people They were amazing. And to this day, like, I'll stay at their beach houses. We message online. Like, I see them out. They're all doing workouts in their basement with equipment that we had manufactured. Like, awesome people. It's just for us in our age, if we would have stayed with it, we would have ended up somewhere we didn't want to be. And that was, like, it was hard. But, yeah, we just did it the right way and had a good intentions of we wanted everybody to be healthy. And that's still everything we've done. It's that. Like, even fit, we just want to make health and fitness like fun and accessible and cool, and that's it. And still it's hard.
So as you were winding it down, and I'm imagining having some really deep conversations with your brother and the people around you about what you did want, what did you hone in on, or what did you identify as like the mission or the purpose that you were striving towards?
We were trying to have a bigger impact, trying to do more, and you know, being online, having the gym, going, doing the certifications, traveling. It was just too much and we weren't focused. And I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that we weren't motivated by bigger business opportunities, because we were, but it was more about, we thought that fitness as a whole was completely screwed up. I mean, even today, men's health, take your shirt off, men's fitness. Like, anytime you think about fitness, it's a guy or girl in really good shape with their clothes off on a Kevlar magazine or on something about how this kettlebell blast or this thing is better than that thing. And we don't think that's the case at all, because there's so many people that are unhealthy and out of shape, and there's so many scammy plans, people, pills. It's just bullshit. And for us, we wanted to change that. And we knew that we were doing it, you know, gym by gym or community by community. But we thought, you know, especially with Joe, as a phenomenal writer, and he was a great speaker when he was, you know, running that side of it, getting him in front of as many people and saying that, it was motivating them to not just be healthy, but like, you know, we would always say, you know, make things happen, do big things. And it was doing that through fitness and getting people, because we've seen having the gyms, we've changed lives just by helping people work out. And we weren't even doing anything crazy. It was just consistency, being committed and doing it. And it was awesome. So how do we get that everywhere? And that's why, you know, we left the spaces that we had, was let's go and try to make it happen. It was hard, you know, making money at that age, especially where, I mean, we grew up in Mount Washington. Coming from that to making the amount of money we were, to leave was a huge decision. It sucked for a while. But, you know, we felt like we needed to do it. And in the end, we think that it paid off.
So let's catch up a little bit to Fit. It was originally Fitzburg, mm-hmm. and we've dropped the Berg. But talk a little bit about what the initial idea was there. And then maybe a little bit about how it has evolved as you've grown. Another thing that I've only started to really appreciate, and I think that a lot of people can learn, is you start maybe with an action or an idea, and some people have it manifested in their mind 20 years. Like, this is step one on this path towards there. And then in other cases, it's this works, this makes sense to me right now. And as that grows, there's an opportunity, maybe step two or three, that will present itself that I just can't see right now because I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Yeah. I'll definitely dive into both of those, because Joe and I are, we always say that we combine to be like a superhuman, because he's one complete side of that and I'm the opposite side of that. So we started, it was called Fitzburg. We saw this movement in food. You know, 10 years ago, you went to Applebee's and Chili's. You spent $30, quick McDonald's meals. Now you're going to $200 sit-down restaurants with some chef that you saw on TV that you want to get his autograph. The change from like what Food Network, like Tasty videos, like the food scene changed so much over the past 10 years, especially even in Pittsburgh. Look at where, you know, the foodie town, all the people, all the chefs. You'll go pay money to go to these farm dinners that didn't exist at all 10 years ago. So we saw that movement in what was happening. And then if you think about fitness, like boutique fitness is up 400% year over year. There's SoulCycle instructors making $100,000 or more a year. They have 50,000 Instagram followers. We saw this happening a few years ago. And then it was December 2015 is when we really came up with Fitsburg. And it was to see if we can make fitness just like food. You know, you want to look up what restaurant to go to. You want to look up what event to go to. You want to look up what, you know, bar to go to. It was like, what gym, farmer's market, juice bar. Is fitness going to be like that? Is it going to be a complete lifestyle for people? And there's something called Thrillist. There's something called Eater. There's Yelp. Most people know. We saw those and we said, we need to make that for fitness. Because if you were sitting in Pittsburgh and you're like, I want to go to a gym or an event or something, there's no way to find out. If you had to be the cool guy that knew what fitness was happening. And that's what Fitsburg was. It was, you know, discover health and fitness in Pittsburgh. And we did it. We signed UPMC as an advertiser. We had races paying us. We were selling shirts. We were growing the brand because that's what we know how to do. We take action. And that kind of plays into your other question. I think that timing is my biggest asset and the willingness to just do it. I failed so many times, it's obnoxious, but I would always do it and never, I would never put myself in a position where I couldn't recover, but I would always take the risk. And we just took the risk and did it and did it. And Joe on the other side is, he's planned, he's procedural, he's managing hundreds of contributors. He's running a team of, you know, 12 here in Pittsburgh now. He thought process and steps while I got to be out there pitching and being exciting and talking people into our and into our business and having them give us money. So it's a phenomenal position to be in. And it worked. We had a great first year. And then the summer of 16, which was last summer, we said, let's make this national. We've seen Thrillist and Eater and Yelp. We can do this for fitness. And we need to get out there now because it's still early enough where no one's going to care what we're doing. So went to 3, 5, 10, 15, and now 20 cities. And we just closed our seed round. And it's the same concept. In every city, there's so many cool events and instructors and people having an impact and doing amazing things. And nobody talks about them. Nobody knows about them. And for us, I think that somebody wants to go to that yoga class in Market Square just as much as they want to go to that bar or that, you know, music event. They want to go to the run group. They want to go do the 5K or the turkey trot. I think that's going to be what people want to do. And it's, we're proving it. And that's all we've been able to do. We don't take money on a local level. There's no pay to play model. It's curated. So we have paid contributors on the ground in every city. If something's good, if they're doing a good job, and we don't evaluate it like, oh, this is our trend. We like kettlebells. We like CrossFit. We like whatever. It's, we evaluate their education, who they are, what they do. And we look up their information. We talk to them. It's, are they good people? If they're doing a good job, if they have good intentions, we talk about them. We don't take money from them. We take money from big companies like UPMC, Kaiser Permanente, Under Armour, you know, all these big races. And we make it available and online so that more people go to these things. And we're trying to raise the entire, you know, profile of fitness as a whole. And that's what we've been focused on. And it's working.
Talk about the business model. So you mentioned some really big companies there that you partner with. It's not just some banner ad on the top of your site. There's a different type of relationship there that's also an evolution that's happening within the world of branding and marketing. Explain for listeners how that partnership works as much as you can and what your goal is in partnering with them.
So there's two things of advertising we think. There's intrusive and then there's native. And native's not just like, oh, I wrote an article about you, but you paid to be on it. It's intrusive is every site you go, it's slow, pop-ups, banner ads blinking, it kind of tears away at what the product is. And for us, we hate that because we think our product is the content and the people we're featuring, and we don't want to interrupt that. So we came up with these, you know, citywide, statewide, exclusive sponsorship deals is what we call them. Just like a company sponsors a race. They get on the shirts, they get on the site, we do that, but it's mostly digital. And we did it in a way that we could brand and continually have this relationship scene. So Pittsburgh, UPMC, they support us and we support a ton of people. And we think that long term, them helping us put on events, us grow the brand, us help every individual gym instructor and everyone else that we talk about by having their name presented by on every page, having, you know, non-intrusive ads that are available, content ads, social ads, that we can track deliverables and have actual ROI, as well as continually brand something every single day. And we're attaching them to something that's so impactful, which is their health and fitness, their lifestyle. You know, the same reason the people that were at our gym would have throw us Christmas parties and get us Christmas presents and still send us cards in the mail, you would have this amazing positive interaction with health and fitness if you do it with somebody. And we're trying to attach these brands to that, but we're doing it in a way that's saying, you know, have your dollars, we'll help you support other people, but it's not going to be in a way that messes it up. And that's what we're doing. And we're doing that with, you know, city by city, essentially. We're taking huge branding opportunities and getting it to a very small city level. And now we're moving into like races that are major races, helping them grow their brand, you know, major retail brands, helping them get in front of people on a local level, because it's no longer just banner ads, clicks. It's no longer being that massive company. You want to have that local feel, and you want to not feel like Walmart, because millennials, young professionals, that group, we hate those brands. I don't want Walmart. I don't want this brand or that brand that's just out there to make money. I want the guy up the street who owns the business. And we can connect people to those groups, which is so hard to scale the way that we have with the writers, the content, the contributors. It's so time consuming. That's why most people don't do it. But we think in the future, it's all about impactful, local, having that small feel, that small town feel. And that's what we've been building with the advertising.
So to that end of scaling and adding all these different cities into your web or portfolio that you're building, what goes into that in terms of, to be native, you need the people on the ground there. Like, yeah. as passionate as you are about maybe the trends in fitness and your experience in this, you can't know what's happening in Portland and San Diego and Denver and Austin.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, as you continue to expand, what goes into the next city that you might open up.
The first part is, so on top of the business of advertising, we're adding ticketing. So our plan with Fit Long Term is, every action that somebody takes, if you want to register for a class, if you want to register for an event, if you want to sign up for a farmer's market, if you want to buy something locally, we want to own the software and the structure to do it so that there's no crazy fees. There's no, you know, click offs to random pages. It can all be done through us. And as a part of doing that, I am, one, going to every single city and spending time there meeting people and shaking hands and trying to just build that relationship. So the start is, we'll go there and spend some time there. A week, a little bit longer, and just meet them, which is crazy. No one's doing that. Just get there and exist. And there's, you know, featured on Fit stickers on the gyms that we send and the shirts and information. And then from there, it's you know, my brother and the team here, which they're phenomenal. They're individually going out to people that are cool. They have cool brands or they have great social, and they're sending them DMs and like, hey, do you want to write for us? We'll pay you. Do you want to do this? We'll pay you. Do you want to have this set up? We'll do this, as well as like putting out job opportunities and having, you know, looking through thousands of profiles and applications and people to get the trainer on the ground in Portland or now London or Vancouver or Toronto or Seattle or Boston, having the right people with the right intentions, and we pay them and we want to keep paying them and pay them more and more and more and take care of them. So we have an actual well thought out, well executed content strategy, not like, you know, Huffington Post is get as many people to write for us for free as possible. We don't think that's the way to go. And Joe used to be a writer. And when he would have to do stuff for free and slave away for hours and not make any money at all, people don't realize that's still how it is. Even some people we approach are like, oh, I want this much. We're like, listen, we're paying more than major newspapers or major brands. And we're trying, like we still are a startup, but we're trying to find this middle ground where we pay them and they contribute, but there are eyes and ears on the ground and we want them to be with us like long-term. And help us, and we're essentially helping them. They're helping us highlight what's happening in a city, which in turn hopefully helps everybody.
Yeah, it's an exciting prospect, and it speaks to your vision for the long-term growth of the company and not some sort of short-term outcome. Your own self-education, your own path in entrepreneurship is not by many accounts the stereotypical outcome. You don't have like the Stanford MBA or something like that. You've been a self-educator through every step, and you've done a number of things that people who go to those type of schools aspire to. You've built a profitable business. You've had a company acquired. You've raised significant amounts of money. And my question for you that I think can just be so helpful for listeners is your thought process around self-education. Like, I think I read you learned to code for the initial nascent stages of Fit. What, I mean, outside of go do it, like a Nike slogan or something, what advice can you give to people who feel like maybe I don't have the credential who feel like they might need permission to go and do something like that.
It's funny, the amount of opportunities that we've had in the rooms that I've been in, every time I walk into a room, there's a part of me that thinks, man, I don't know how the hell I got here. Like, I'm not technically on paper supposed to be in this room. I'm not supposed to be talking at this, you know, event, or, you know, talking at this class at CMU, or telling people what I've done. That is that little tiny part of me that has that like 1 ounce of fear left, that if there is any, it's like, man, how the hell did I get here? But it was more that I honestly, the secret power was like, growing up, I had an amazing supportive family, and they were, you know, they make you feel like you can do something. And it's not about just going out and doing it. It's about, I would always look at like the guy who did it, the guy who is doing it. And rarely is there a scenario in life where you have to have a credential to do something. They're all just set up in like gatekeepers. If you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a teacher, you have to follow the rules and get the certifications. If you want to own a business, you want to build a product, you want to build this, you don't. So it's not about putting the time in to get the accomplishment that then they can tell you you're okay to do it. There's so much information available online, and there are so many people that have done it on their own, way more successful than I am, that if you know you want to do something, you have to be both, you know, confident enough to understand that you can do it and be confident in yourself. But the other side of that is, I always say confident and clueless. I'm confident enough to know I can do it, but clueless to know that I shouldn't be able to. Like, you have that confidence, and then you think like, you know what, if it fails, you know, no big deal. I'm clueless to what's going to happen. It doesn't matter. And I would just spend time. It's not like, oh, go do it and it's going to get done. I would spend hours and hours. I'm not a good reader. I probably read it, honest to God, sixth grade level. I had terrible grades in high school because I was so bad and I had so many learning disabilities, and they just thought I was a dumb football player. So now I have a software called VoiceStream that reads. You can have anything like email, structure, articles put in there, and you can listen to them. I consume so much content and so many articles and so much information, and I have since day one, trying to learn, because I'm always learning and I'm fighting an uphill battle. So it's not like, oh, just go do it, it's going to happen. It's, you have to spend five times as much time. You have to go and learn and sit in for 6 hours a night between midnight and 6 a.m. on YouTube, learning how to code so you can build the shittiest first version of your site. It's more about understanding that you got to have the confidence to do it, but it's going to take so much more time. And you are fighting an uphill battle if you don't have the credentials, but you can do it. And that's why you win. And then at the end, people will look back and be like, wow, super respect. Props that you did it, and you did it this way versus the other way. But it's going to take so much longer and more work, and that's why it typically doesn't happen. I think people get discouraged, not just from their own, like, oh, I can't do this, but the structure of life, every single step along the way, is meant to make you feel terrible for not having your degree, not being set up the right way. You know, the people you meet, the friends that you have, the things that you do, most of the time they're going to look down on you for not having that scenario set up.
You're building a team here with Fit, already at 12 people, continuing to expand. How do you apply those type of filters when you're thinking about someone to add to your team?
I don't even look at their resume, honest to God. Joe's obviously, and I'm not going to say this enough, he is the engine of the business. He is the operations. When things happen, when things get paid, when people get brought on board, it's because Joe's procedures and thinking is what make it happen. I just get to go do a song and dance and get people excited about stuff, so I'm lucky to have that. But when I'm involved in that process, it's who they are. Like, we have 23-year-old kid running our Instagram and killing it. We have a 24-year-old being our web editor, killing it. She was a server before this. She has experience being creative. She has experience doing things, but it's more about who they are, their cultural fit, and are they willing to just put it all aside and learn and get after it? Because what we're doing is not normal. There's not a, hey, we're hiring this person to do this. It's kind of hard. And the people around us are just killers. It doesn't matter where they went to school, what they did. If they can learn and we sit down and we have that gut feeling that they fit and they are willing to put in the time, we'll train them, we'll teach them. That's how I learn. And I figure I'd rather somebody that doesn't have a way that they think it should be done, come in and do it and mess things up. I'd rather have somebody that works hard, wants to learn and do it, and I can spend it, you know, 10 hours with them teaching them how to do it. And that's all that matters. That's why our team, I'm 28, Joe's 31. The next youngest person under me is 27, and then it's like 23, 24, and they're all either first job or second job that had nothing to do with this out of school, and they're just here all day, and they're amazing. It's unbelievable the amount of things that we get done, and we're doing it across the country now, even more so in, you know, Canada and the UK and everywhere else with a team of misfits. It's awesome. And I love it. And that's how it'll always be. We're never going to hire the COO or the CFO or this experienced guy. Maybe there'll be an advisor, but for us, it's finding people that, and giving them an opportunity and just letting them dominate.
I dig it. As we aim towards wrapping up, Anthony, one last thing I wanted to ask you about is, so we talked about CrossFit, we talked about SoulCycle, we talked about kettlebells. Are there any, I don't know if you look into the data or just what's happening, any other fitness trends that people should be paying attention to or you might be able to predict are going to be on the rise in the next couple of years?
Yeah, there's a few. I think the big change is going to be even more so down that path of boutique. It might be Pilates might come back in again, or the mega reformers that are happening, or, you know, more so smaller bodyweight kettlebell studios or the CrossFit. That trend of boutique is going to go, and it's going to be less LA Fitness, less, you know, Lifetime Fitness, more and more and more. But it's also going to be, you're going to see events in groups. So there's free run groups that happen. There's free yoga in the park events. There's bar in the park. There's these trends. The trend is going to be your social structure is fitness. The people you hang out with, the things that you do outside of work are fitness. That's the trend. It's going to completely consume people's lives in a positive way. Instead of, you know, getting done with work and going out and drinking, you're going to go to a CrossFit class, then go and have a paleo lunch, and then you're going to get up the next day and go to a free 6 a.m. run group at the park. And that's going to just completely consume people's lives and in the most amazing way possible. And that's what I think. Eventually, it's not the $12 cocktail, it's the $12 juice. It's the avocado toast. It's that so much beyond like one specific type of fitness, because there's just so many out there. It's just going to be, that's your life is fitness. And I can't wait till that day comes. It's happening in other cities.
Yeah.
New York, LA, it's happening in the UK. It's happening in some other big cities. But when it's in Pittsburgh, which you can kind of see, there's so many amazing trainers and instructors and people doing great stuff. And they're going to Salute, and they're going to Arsenal Strength, or they're going to, you know, Steel Revolution, or they're going to these places in Pittsburgh. And then they go out and they meet up for a run, and then they go run the marathon together, and they plan their races. Like, your whole life is fitness. And that trend is kind of the same thing as the restaurants that I was talking about earlier.
Awesome. I was in Australia earlier this year, and I can speak to the avocado toast craze just getting started. I know that's a very millennial thing. This has been fantastic, Anthony. If people... I'm sure we'll want to learn more and follow along with everything that you're doing. What digital coordinates can we give folks to do that?
Yes. I'd say the first place would be Fit on Instagram, which it's at Fit City. We're trying to get the Fit name. Still don't have it. Kind of upset about it. But Fit City on Instagram. And then the site's FITT.co. And that would be the main place. Me personally, I don't do much on social because that's all I'm focused on. If anything, LinkedIn, I'm trying to put out content about this whole entrepreneurship thing a little bit and just trying to connect with people there.
Awesome. We'll link that in the show notes. GoingDeepWithAaron.com/podcast is the place to find the notes for this and every episode of the show. But as we do at the end of each episode, I'm going to give Anthony the mic one final time to issue a actionable personal challenge for the audience.
Yes. Actionable personal challenge would be taking the time to kind of push through all the normal life stuff. Sit back and think, you know, set aside anything in my life that is normal, anything that follows the normal structure, that pays to gatekeepers, that pays to people getting in your way or telling you what to do, or your boss, or that relationship that might not be the best. Take it all aside and think and say, what do I want to do? And then make a plan. Actually, if all of the things that held me back in life, all of the gatekeepers and the structures were gone, what would you want to do? And actually write down a plan. It doesn't have to be a business plan. It doesn't have to be, you know, the business model canvas. It can be, I have a plan. This is what I want to do. If perfect world scenario, what could I do? And if it's not what you're doing today, take a step every single month. And this is how I'd always get started. Every single month, I would take one step towards making that goal happen. And that's how we went from, you know, a dumb and uneducated Marine to owning a gym, and then from owning a gym to owning a massive media company, was I would take one step every month if I wasn't solely working on that project to get to that master goal. And I would keep it on my fridge, on my board. I'm super big into like visualization. I've written myself checks for how much money I want to make in the future. And that's that step. It's like, write it down, put it on the board. If you're not working at every day because you have to take care of people and pay bills and do that, that's fine. But every month, take one goal to get there.
I love it. Are you familiar with the rapper character Big Shaq?
No.
I'm going to show you after we hop off this recording. He wrote this amazing vision board and it manifested itself in like the exact same way. So I'm excited to show you that. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Big Shaq, the one and only. Man's not hot. Never hot. Scrap. Skitty-cat-cat. Boom. 2 + 2 = 4. -1, that's 3. Quick maths. Everyday man's on the block. Smoke trees. See your girl in the park. That girl was a uckers. When the ting went quack, 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 you man was ducking. Hold tight, ask me, my brother. He's got a pumpy, big team. Hold tight, my man, my guy. He's got a frisbee. A trap, trap, trap on the phone. Moving out cornflakes. Rice Krispies. Hold tight, my girl, Whitney. On the road, doing 10 toes. Like my toes.
Like my toes.
You man thought I froze. I see a pen girl on a post.
Chilling.
If she ain't on it, I ghost. Ha! Look at your nose.
Check your nose, fam.
You donut. Nose long like garden hose. I tell a man's not hot. Tell a man's not hot. The girl told me, take off your jacket. I said, babe, man's not hot.
Never hot.
I tell a man's not hot.
Never hot.
I tell a man's not hot.
Never hot.
The girl told me, take off your jacket. I said, babe, man's not hot.